Can we move to paper 13?
Yes. Agenda paper 13 is to finalize the tentative agenda decision with regard to assessment of other facts and circumstances. We received three comment letters, all of which agreed with the committee's decision not to add the issue to its agenda. In addition, one comment letter pointed out two things. First, they asked the committee to consider this agenda decision when developing examples or other implementation material with regard to the issue of the assessment of other facts and circumstances. Second, they suggested that the committee address the topic relating to the recognition and measurement of the joint arrangement as soon as possible. As for the first point, we note that the continuing discussion at the March 2014 Interpretations Committee meeting was consistent with this tentative agenda decision at its January 2014 meeting. Consequently, we think that if the committee were to develop any guidance, we expect that it would be consistent with this agenda decision. With regard to the second point, we plan to bring an analysis of the issue relating to the recognition and measurement of the joint arrangement at the next meeting. Consequently, we recommend that the committee finalize its decision not to add the issue to its agenda.
Okay, let me ask one question first before we get into the details, because we may not want to now. How many would like to wait until we've talked about the project entities first before having this conversation? Can I just have a show of hands? Okay, we'll have the conversation. Laurence, you wanted to come in first.
Because perhaps my previous comment has been misinterpreted. I'm happy to finalize this agenda decision, but I also agree with Philippe's comments that the agenda decision is not enough to properly understand how to apply the narrow view as described in agenda paper 2A, I think. And all the discussions we had in March about the cash cascading and so on are elements that are important to explain. So this is why I'm happy with the finalization of this agenda decision. Still, I do believe that it's appropriate to continue the discussion and look at what you proposed in your agenda paper to see.
John?
I'm happy to finalize the agenda decision. I do agree with Laurence that there's a whole lot of questions we addressed in the last meeting that are not covered, but I mean, it seems to me that this committee often tries to take on too much and answer too many questions and ends up falling in a hole. So to be able to answer this one when we've seemed to have reached an element of consensus is, I think, a step forward. And then we can, in the context of project entities at the next meeting, consider some of those other factors.
That was my understanding of why this decision excluded a lot of that discussion. Tony?
Yeah, I also support finalizing the agenda decision for much the same reasons. I think we can finalize it on the basis of the conversation we had about this specific topic without expanding it to talk about the others. I just have one drafting observation, which is in the third paragraph, we say that rights and obligations by nature are enforceable. I then think in the next paragraph we don't need to say enforceable rights and obligations. I think once we've said that they are by their nature enforceable, I think we've made the point, and we don't need to repeat it. But otherwise I would support finalizing it as it is.
Point taken. Martin?
I agree with the agenda decision. However, I think we should carefully consider the wording create enforceable rights to assets and obligations. Within the agenda paper 2A, we talk in number four, we talk about indirect rights and indirect obligations. The question is whether we really have an enforceable right to that asset, or whether we have an enforceable, or we have a right to an asset of similar value or something like this. The question is, if I have a patent or so, and this patent more or less is legally owned by someone, however, I have, say, profit sharing or whatever, so I have an indirect right, but the question is whether this is directly related to that specific asset.
Which I think correct me if I misunderstood you, gets to the point that John was making, that there are other questions about the application, the cascading rights and obligations, or the cascading cash flows, some of that stuff, that ultimately we will have to include in an agenda decision, but not now. This one is a narrow decision based on a narrow interpretation. Okay. That said, drafting suggestions, please, to the staff. Any objections with finalizing this, then? None heard, we will proceed. Okay, there is no paper for the next conversation. This is an oral update on core inventories.
Good morning, everyone. We will present technical analysis of the core inventories issue at July Interpretations Committee meeting. And the objective of this update is to provide information on the feedback from consultations with individual ISB members in April and on the status of the staff analysis. I will start from reminding you of the background of the issue. The question relates to the accounting of co-inventory items with the two key characteristics. They are physically identical to ordinary inventories and as such qualify for recognition under IS2, and they are necessary to bring a PPE asset to its required operating condition, and as such qualify for recognition as an element of its cost. The issue is that it is currently unclear which standard IS2 or IS16 should be applied to such items. The issue was discussed in March, and a tentative decision to develop an interpretation was taken. We consulted ISB members at various meetings in April to inform them of the tentative decision to develop an interpretation and to obtain their individual informal views on the issue. We did not ask the ISB members to make any decisions when we consulted them. Many of the ISB members consulted did not express support for the classification under IS16 and raised the three key concerns. First, some of the ISB members noted that many examples of co-inventories are physically substituted by ordinary inventories on a continuous basis, and as such, they are subsequently sold. This would suggest that they should be accounted for as inventories. Second, a small number of ISB members also expressed a view that co-inventories cause PPE to operate rather than merely bringing it to the condition of being capable of operating. And lastly, several ISB members observed that accounting for co-inventories under IS16 could result in accounting treatment similar to that achieved using a LIFO cost formula. Thus, many of the ISB members suggested that IS16 should be applied only to co-inventories whose cost can be recovered. Some ISB members also didn't express support for developing an interpretation on the issue. Some of them were concerned about whether the issue is expected to have a material effect, and a small number of ISB members also expressed a view that the issue should not be addressed because the IFRSs are principle-based standards. We will include the description of this feedback we received and our analysis of the concerns raised in the July staff paper. Regarding the status of our analysis of the issue, you requested us to define the scope of what is considered to be co-inventories and to analyze its applicability to a range of industries. In response to this request, we will bring analysis of the three key issues in July. The scope of the interpretation, the items that we think fall under within the scope of IS16, and consideration of the possible consequences of developing an interpretation, including the analysis of applicability of the concept to a range of industries. At this meeting, we wanted to indicate the way we are going to approach those issues. First, we think that the scope of the interpretation should address cases in which the scope of IS-2 and IS-16 are overlapping. So we would therefore include items that are physically identical to ordinary inventories and that are necessary to bring a PPE asset to its required operating condition. Second, we will propose a definition of the items that fall within the scope of IS-16, taking into account concerns raised by the SB members. In particular, some of the comments made have caused us to consider whether such items should be limited only to inventories whose costs can be recovered through sales or consumption in the production process. We are also currently carrying out additional analysis in respect of the applicability of the concept to a range of industries based on the responses to the additional outreach conducted in April and on publicly available information. So that is the way we want to approach those issues, and we will bring our staff paper at the July Interpretations Committee meeting. Do you have any questions on the feedback received from consultations?
And just before we do, I think, you know, to me, the key challenge that our consultations with board members have given us is to really be very clear as to when particular items cause PPE to operate versus when they bring the PPE to a condition that enables it to operate or being capable of operating. And that's, I think, where we will need in our staff work to really focus on distinguishing between those two.
Michael, a question, and it may reveal a challenge to the committee. This was a confidential submission, correct?
No,
this was from ESMA.
From ESMA, so it wasn't from somebody who's newly adopting. If it had come from a first-time adopter and it said we've got some issues, that would present a different challenge. I think one of the issues that we need to be clear, at least in our communications with board members, is these are two standards that have been around a long time, and people have had core inventories since Moses was a corporal, and so why now, I think, is the challenge that we would, that some of the board members are putting to us. Why is this an issue now? So we would need to communicate that. But any questions for the staff? Scott?
I'm trying to make sure I followed one of the things that you communicated about the board's view. You said that the board indicated that perhaps these items should only be in IAS 16 if the cost is recoverable. I would have thought that would put it in IAS 2 because that would suggest you could sell it.
Only unrecoverable items. They suggested that only unrecoverable items should be
recoverable. Okay, yes. I apologize. I misheard.
So did I. I was going
to. Okay.
Sorry. Others? Okay, well, we will look forward.
Andrew,
excuse me. I didn't see you there.
Thanks, yeah. I don't think I heard you mention units of account. And I know I believe the staff paper we looked at back in March rather sidestepped the question. But even with the more basic examples, line pack and cushion gas, I'm not sure we can get to a compelling answer without concluding whether unit of account is the collective amount of material or is each individual molecule, which will be replaced and will be sold. So
wouldn't one of the challenges to that being that IAS 16 itself sidesteps unit of account?
It does indeed. So how can we interpret without sidestepping the sidestep?
That's a dance I don't want to try.
It does seem that unit of account does come into play with the replaceable issue. I mean, to the extent you actually have these core inventory items where the physical items that make up the core inventory change over time, there just has to be a certain amount. I think that is a unit of account issue. On the other hand, where you have the unrecoverable core inventories, those typically physically wind up being the same things for a period of time. So it's a little bit of a different issue. But I agree with Andrew. I don't think we can ignore unit of account because it either makes the substitution issue very important or not important, depending upon what you think the unit of account is.
I would just observe that the last IASB staff member we asked to consider the unit of account quit and went back to South Africa. So, Laurence, John, and then Gary.
If it is an element that is not recoverable, perhaps also there is some work to be done in looking at interaction with decommissioning of the PP&E and checking how those elements, how and whether those elements form part of some decommissioning liabilities already. So I do think there is an interaction there.
You're right. John?
But the only comment I was going to make, I mean, the input from board members, I think, should be considered in terms of whether the committee should proceed with the project if there's no desire on the part of the board to do anything with it. I mean, it seems like we could do a lot of work on this. So I'd hope when the paper comes in July that there'll be an assessment of whether we ought to proceed or not.
Well, that was kind of the point I was trying to make a little differently. Gary, board member privilege.
Yeah, thank you. I was actually one of the board members who was asking the question, why now? You know, these issues have been around decades, and nothing seemed to have, might diversity in practice, but nothing seemed to be broken as best as, you know, I can tell. On the other hand, taking something out of the industrial society and deal with accounting for that is such a change from a financial industries accounting that we've seemed to have been focused on for the last any number of years. I think the concern I had was, is we cannot start giving specific guidance because that assumes you know more about engineering and manufacturing and how companies these machines operate. And I think came around to, okay, we should perhaps do something. If it just where does IS2 versus IS16, where's the line? And gee, if you're generally in one direction, it's inventory, and generally another direction, it's PP&E. But I think that's probably as close as we can get. So we should recognize there will be diversity in practice. Now, and however, if it gives a cleaner line as to where one is one and one is the other, we perhaps move the ball forward a little bit. But I think if there's ever going to be a subject that this committee is going to address that can be done quickly, this probably should be it. Where if they think fight the inclination to won't get down into if it's fuel oil, you know, that's got changing commodity prices, you know, the throughput versus something that really is just sort of disposed and the machine is run out. I think we really got to keep it very high level and should probably try as best as we can to can we do this in no more than like two meetings, because this is, I don't think there's anything really broken in practice and it's been around a long time. So I think give a little bit of guidance on where the line is fine, but fight our inner selves and sort of keep it at that.
Recognize that we can't do an interpretation in 2 years, much less two meetings. But I did want to turn to our regulators, since this has been identified as a regulator-sourced issue. Julie?
Actually, I was going to make a history point as opposed to a regulatory point. Just with respect to IS-16, I mean, I flinched a little bit when we said it sidestepped the unit of account issue, because actually, I mean, the board thought about it and purposefully didn't specify a particular unit account because you didn't need to in order to get the have the model work. I mean, they wrote an accounting model that isn't dependent on unit of account. So if you chose narrow or wide, the model, you know, got you to where you needed to go either way. So sidestep implies they couldn't solve it, but it was actually the model that's in this IS-16 works regardless of what your starting point is, which was the strategy, as opposed to let's specify everybody has to have the same starting point and then only have.
But if you sidestep unit of account, it tells you how big the, doesn't tell you how big the bucket is.
Right.
Into which you're going to put costs. So the model works.
Right.
Small costs or large costs, but it doesn't tell you how big the bucket is.
Right. But then the lever that offsets that is, I mean, depreciation is really where
right.
one thing is where it makes a difference how big your bucket is, because if it's a big bucket, you're going to have all kinds of cats and dogs in there, and they aren't all going to have the same useful life. So 16 relieved that pressure by telling you how to do depreciation if you had a wide bucket with all kinds of cats and dogs. Therefore, you didn't have to specify everybody had the same.
Our metaphor is breaking down fast here. Don, did you want to come in on this?
Yes. The question was raised, why now? One of the enforcers in Europe encountered this issue during a review. Brought it up in the WECS meeting. There we discussed it. It was... we found that there is divergence in practice in this area, that we see it in several financial statements. We couldn't come to a conclusion, to the same conclusion as enforcers, and that was the reason to refer it to the IFRS or see it, to bring it here to say, okay, guys, we do believe that there is an issue here, so that's why now.
Yeah, that's a valid comment. All right, well, then we... As I say, we will wait with bated breath.